All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our NFL podcast for Thursday, December 29th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
And we are from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, or DFSR.com for short. You can head over to the site now, grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system with optimal lineups powered by our good friends over at LineupLab.com. That'll help you calculate optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings NFL. The package also includes NBA projections, which have been on fire for most of the season, especially of late, so that you're getting them all under one subscription package, which we think is about the best deal you're going to find in the business for the services we provide. It's free for three days and then $29.95 a month after that, so no downside to just go try it out. Formulate your own opinion, and then we'll probably just see you around for the long haul. For today's podcast, we're going to break down our value plays that we wrote up. These are geared toward cash games for week 17 in the NFL. And then tomorrow we'll be back breaking down every game on the slate in game by game fashion, which will be fun with all the playoff implications. And by fun, I'm putting fun in quotes if you can't see it, just because week 17 in the NFL has its has its really own set of landmines. And actually, before we even get, I'll say this tomorrow also, but before we even get into the value plays, I just want to make a quick point about teams that have something to play for this week. This is not the be all end all. Bad teams will continue to trot their bad players out for a week, but the teams that actually have something to play for this week, and I'm not going to go through what each one of them is, but it's basically the Falcons, the Seahawks, the Lions, Green Bay, Washington, and Tampa Bay in the NFC, and then the Pats, the Raiders, the Chiefs, and the Dolphins in the AFC. So those are the teams that will go into week 17 with something on the line, whether it be home field advantage, just getting into the playoffs, yada, yada, yada. So, again, it doesn't totally matter for some of these teams, but it does matter for some more than others, which we'll get into. Okay, that was my long 2-minute opening to, our value plays article.
You nailed it, dude.
I actually do think I nailed it. And we'll talk about it in the show notes, but you can mostly just save most of your compliments for them.
I was kidding, dude, but you literally just nailed it.
Give me your general thoughts about week 17 like this, when there's just varying levels of motivation for every team. Like, how incentivized are you to play more or less maybe in cash games? Do you think research benefits the bold here, or do you think it's maybe like you can get into like strict stay away situations? I don't know what your just general, bird's eye view of week 17 is.
I think it's the hardest week of almost of any sport, trying to figure out who's actually going to go out and get their playing time. Like, we've talked a lot about this in the NBA podcast, but the key to NBA that most people don't really want to invest the time into is getting the usage just right and getting the minutes just right. And if you don't do both of those things, then you're up a creek, right? And so for most of the football season, it's just getting usage or opportunity correct. But for this week, getting playing time correct is a huge, huge struggle. So basically, I think if you're going into this week and there are it's more than a tiebreaker to take a guy who's going to almost certainly get his opportunity versus a guy who you have question marks around, right? So, say the Steelers came out this week and said, we just want to get Roethlisberger reps this week because it's a scrimmage and he's looked sloppy recently, right? If they wanted to say that, you still would never trust it because that could mean he could play the first quarter, the first half. Like, there'd be no price I'd be willing to pay almost to play a guy who wasn't going to get his playing time potentially. And so that being said, you can potentially overrate it, I guess, but I'd say by far the bigger scenario is going to be people playing otherwise good plays that just have nothing to play for and wind up getting buzzed off on their opportunity.
Yeah, there are certain situations, like last week of NFL is a tough one. The day after the trade line, the trade deadline in the NBA is always a little tricky, but there's some of these very, very specific days or weeks where things get super dicey. And I mean, I think some things are somewhat crystallized, and we'll talk about where maybe some of the safety is and some of the risk is. I actually think quarterback this week, that's a segue, by the way, quarterback this week is pretty safe in terms of teams that have something to play for and also just were good plays independent of, like, if this was week 5 or whatever. So, we'll start with, the first guy we have, and actually this guy doesn't fit the mold, even after I do that lead-in, is Drew Brees. Brees plays the Falcons. There's no talk about the Saints resting. I think that sometimes the other thing that comes into play is teams playing teams that have something to play for. So, the Saints go into to Atlanta. Saints don't have anything to play for, but Atlanta does. Do you think there's, going the other way, the pride factor of New Orleans going in and saying, well, we don't want the Falcons to get, home field advantage through the playoffs. We're going to try our hardest to stop them. That's going to be our final piece of motivation. Do you think that comes into play at all?
Potentially. I mean, I think the Saints are relatively trustworthy just because their situation really hasn't changed much from last week. So, I mean, we see this ridiculous behavior sometimes where coaches are like, all right, we're going to shut it down for this game of the season. No reason to risk anything. Well, why was there a reason to risk anything last week? You know, like, right. You play 16 games a year. You can't just go out there and play football one more time. I don't know. So I do think the Saints will, I think Breeze in particular will go out there and play maybe some of the other pieces that might have some more question marks around them. But I don't see any reason. Certainly Vegas believes Breeze will play his full allotment of minutes, given that this game just has a ridiculously high over-under. I mean, I don't know if you look closely at this yet, but they have the highest over by 8 points over the next highest game this week. That is just completely absurd. So, I don't mind playing Breeze really in any format.
No, I'm glad you mentioned the Vegas thing, because we can learn a lot from how Vegas views this situation as well, right? So if they had thought that Breeze was going to sit, or the Saints were going to tank, or just whatever, then you wouldn't see them sitting around 25 implied points, which is still a little bit on the low side, though Falcons have looked decent on defense in the short term, so that could be part of it. You know, why play a guy like Breeze here and not, you know, and we wrote up Breeze, so don't get me wrong, but why play a guy like Breeze here and not a guy like Matt Ryan when the Falcons are over-under, or their implied total is around 32? Started at 31, hammered up to 32.
Yeah, it's interesting with Ryan because he's actually been amazing this year. I mean, he's got 115 quarterback rating, 34 touchdowns, 7 picks. He's been great by all really observable metrics. And so it sounds like I hate Ryan as a quarterback per se. But the really interesting thing about what the Falcons have done this year is they've really dialed back his opportunity. So just to give you a frame of reference, the last 4 seasons, he's averaged about 630 pass attempts per season. This year, he has under 500 right now. So they've really dialed back. They've given him basically the low-hanging fruit opportunities. This is why Julio Jones' targets are way down this season, by the way, as well. Really, this organizational shift back towards the run. So, you know, that's why they can support multiple fantasy running backs. Like, you know, I think there may have been 3 that people played last week, Ward, Freeman, and Coleman. So I think that's really it. So, and if you look at the attempts, 33, 23, 28 in the last 3 weeks, the Falcons are a team that doesn't necessarily always prioritize the pass. All that being said, I could absolutely see this being sort of the higher end of Ryan's pass attempts this season, but... So aside from 142 attempt game, his next highest was 35 all season long. And it's just kind of hard to support a high price on 35 pass attempts per game.
Yeah, I wonder with Ryan, and I'm aware that we didn't write Ryan up here, and we just began this discussion with Breeze, but I wonder with Ryan if his yards per attempt, because yards per attempt are significantly higher than the next highest guy. So he's 9.2, and then the next guy as high is a full yard behind at Brady at 8.2. I wonder how much sometimes if you're completing significantly higher, you know, if you are completing significantly longer passes, that just cuts into A, the overall plays you need to run, or B, you're just completing long passes, you're getting up, and then you no longer need the pass anymore. And I wonder how much that's cut into his opportunity.
Yeah, I think that's a worthwhile question to ask. And, you know, we're not equipped to do that in over the course of like a single podcast here. Looking just back through his game log, like sometimes I think what it probably does is it makes a meaningful impact on the game script of the game. So like you can take the games against San Francisco and LA, for instance. Yeah, he was completing a high yards per attempt and they were just killing the other team. So it's very natural that his attempts would go down overall. Looking through some of the other games, like they lost to Kansas City. And he was completing 8.7 yards per attempt, only through 34 passes. They lost to Philly. They lost kind of badly to Philly, 24-15, and he only threw 33 passes. They lost to San Diego. He only threw 34 passes. And then the other loss was Seattle, and he threw 42. So, and that was his highest attempts of the season. And so, I think that could be true on some level. I'd have to look, and you'd have to run this across, you know, not just Ryan, but other quarterbacks who have bigger sample sizes. But I think probably game script has a much bigger factor in the overall attempts. Although with the Falcons, it seems like it could just be the plan too. Like, I don't know.
The game script for them too has gone off the rails some games because they have completed like a ton of long touchdowns, like these long Taylor Gabriel catch and runs, and Julio Jones has had a couple of these early in the year. So I don't know. Sure. It could just be a Matt Ryan thing that I'm just sort of transposing into all quarterbacks, and that might not be the case. I just was wondering if that's why his overall attempts are just maybe lower for the season. It could not be. It could just be saying they have a really, really balanced offense, and that is what makes it hard to play him. And they've been smart with the way they balance their offense. They haven't run either Freeman or Coleman to death this year. Both those guys are probably relatively fresh. So anyway, they started with Drew Brees, And now it's devolved into 4 minutes of Matt Ryan's.
Yeah, Matt Ryan talk is important. I think he will be highly owned this week. I mean, the Falcons certainly have as much to play for as anyone because they're playing for a first round bye. So it's basically like they get two cracks at a first round game. So
right.
I suspect whatever they do for this game, they're going to pull out all the stops. I would suggest that for this season, they've had this very, just a very predictable game plan of passing about 35, 33 times and then running the rest of the time. So, yeah, who knows? He could wind up being a great play, too. Like, the thing with Ryan, the bet you're making on Ryan is that the yards per attempt are sustainable. Because if the yards per attempt aren't sustainable, then he won't look like nearly as good a play from my perspective. But if they are, he could be a great play.
The other quarterback, next guy we had on the list was Aaron Rodgers. Rodgers, it just hasn't really mattered what's been going on with him this year. He just seems to run out every week and just kind of do his thing. I mean, the game against Chicago aside, where the weather was somewhat of an issue, last week he goes in a little bit hurt, loses Randall Cobb before the game, gets hurt during the game, and still goes 28 for 38 for 347 and 4 touchdowns.
Yeah, not bad.
He also ran a touchdown in. Is Rodgers in a safety level, and Green Bay does have something to play for this week. Are we looking at Rodgers' floor, considering just the accuracy plus the rushing? I mean, does he arguably have just a higher floor than a guy like Breeze or Ryan, just because of what he brings to the table?
Well, I think the combination of what he brings to the table and the fact that the Packers have like kind of everything to play for this week means he's the cash game play I'd feel most comfortable with. I still feel comfortable with Breeze, but I think with Rodgers, you just get this different degree of certainty. He's done it against all types of defenses. Like, a lot of people were concerned about the Minnesota defense last week, and to contribute 5 touchdowns and 350 passing yards, I think, shows that he's not, you wouldn't want to call him matchup proof per se, but he also crushed the Seahawks. Like, I don't know, the Packers passing game is just really clicking right now, and they can kind of step on Detroit's throat here too, which I think is meaningful on some level. So I think he just has a great week. And I think if the Packers are going to go down, they're going to go down with Rodgers passing the ball. So the league average matchup against Detroit, I really like this spot.
Yeah, this is the Sunday night game, and they're both playing each other for sort of win and in. The Packers are already in, but they definitively have something to play for in this game. So I just like this one playing out to the finish, and from that point of view, plus what Rodgers can do on the ground, cash game, yeah, it's just hard to go. It really is very difficult to go wrong with him in cash games. And the last guy we had on there was Russell Wilson. The Seahawks are playing for a first-round bye. They need to win, and then Atlanta needs to lose. They're playing at the same time, so theoretically they're just going to have to just assume that the situation is working out perfectly for them. Wilson's a guy we were kind of high on early in the season, and then we got worried about some of the weapons he had. The big thing for him this week is he plays the 49ers. So the 49ers are an absolute mess. This is well known. They have one of the worst defenses. And if it weren't for the Browns this year, they'd be far and away the worst defense. But the Browns and them are duking it out to just see who can be, playing a game of defense.
I think they
brass.
Have a comfortable lead over the Browns for worst defense of the year.
Oh, do they really?
That remains to be seen.
Okay, well, either way, they're both almost historically bad. 27 implied points for Wilson. Do you see him like sort of in that Aaron Rodgers category because of what he can provide on the ground? 36 yards rushing last week. He rushed the ball 10 times last week. They have some running back concerns, I guess, with Rawls. But give me your thoughts on Wilson.
Yeah, I think Wilson falls into this category of guys with very observable things to play for. Obviously, they need to work for it a little bit more because they need to win and Atlanta needs to lose for them to secure the first round bye. But if that comes to fruition, they'll be quite happy with that, of course. So I think that he'll be out there. He'll be doing his thing. I really think there are a couple of extenuating issues here. Like, for instance, if Atlanta gets off to a huge lead against New Orleans, or if they just crush the 49ers and they're up by 20 points going into the fourth quarter, there are some things that could cut into his playing time here, but I'd have to think that by and large, he'll be out there doing his thing. It hurts to not have Tyler Lockett, I guess, but it didn't seem to matter last week connecting with Doug Baldwin 13 times on 19 targets. So I think he'll be solid. I'm not sure if I want to go in this direction instead of Rodgers for just 1,200 less, but on DraftKings in particular, like, he's only 400 less than Rodgers, but definitely a guy to keep on your radar. And obviously the upside is electric with what he can do on the ground.
Yeah, I like the price separation a little more on FanDuel, like you said. Once it gets close, I think you clearly need to go Rodgers. At running back, the decisions aren't so clear. So we just gave basically three quarterbacks with varying levels of things to play for. And if you want to throw Matt Ryan in the mix, you have four. At running back, I just don't, there just isn't as much in terms of safe running backs with teams that, are motivated to sort of win. So the first guy along those lines, we started off with David Johnson. The Cardinals are out of it. in a realistic world, it wouldn't make sense to, you know, run a guy like David Johnson to death in the last game of the season. I'm not sure what part of like the realistic world where that meets with our fantasy like needs, but in turn, you know, there's been no word about them, you know, limiting his touches, and there's been no word about them resting anybody. So with that, all that in mind, Johnson against the Rams this week, do you see him as just in terms of just straight up opportunity? Okay. By the way, Le'Veon Bell is going to sit this week, so that's takes him off the list if you weren't aware. But in certain terms of straight up opportunity, is he just the highest floor guy? And we just need to trust that he's going to go out there and just, even if he did like 80% of what we kind of had him projected for, is that good enough?
Yeah, I think the combination of an excellent matchup and, you know, some of the milestone stuff he's working on. He's had a tremendous season, and I think he's one of the things, because I think there's also a business element of this for teams like the Cardinals, where they're like, well, what are our fans excited about? Like, what right. do they like about our team? And it would be a big bummer for them, I think, to see Johnson go out there and then, you know, just carry the ball 10 times and sit for the rest of the game. So I think he'll get out there. I think he'll do his thing. You know, they have just as much to play for this week as they did last week, so I don't know why they would vary from the game script too much. Now, he might not get 35 touches, but he shouldn't need it in such an excellent matchup.
Yeah, you know, Vegas has them putting up around 24 points, which is probably an acceptable number if you're worried about them playing some of their star guys, even though the Rams are a pretty bad defense, all things considered, and they do play pretty slow as well. Johnson has already topped 1,000 yards. He's like a great game away from actually going 1,000 and 1,000. Like, he would need like 150 or so receiving yards, which I don't think is in play. But I guess it's for of all the running backs, he and Bell are the two guys that could put up that kind of numbers sure. in terms of out of the passing game. So I see Johnson as I'm probably just going to end up paying for it and just hoping that he gets out there and gets, you know, 20 to 24 total touches between runs and targets and just kind of hope.
32 touches last week, right? And again, right. like that, they weren't playing for anything then either. So I don't know. I don't see why he doesn't go out and get his opportunity.
After him, we had written up D'Angelo Williams early in the week with the idea that Bell was going to sit. Although I just updated it this morning to just note that there was some speculation that D'Angelo will not get the full load of carries, which is a huge bummer because he seemed like just a total lock considering what he had done early in the season with Bell out. But him coming back from injury, I guess they've said, well, they might just do sort of a combo deal of him and Fitzgerald Toussaint. How much does a news like that lower the expectations on a guy like D'Angelo? Because I think when we looked at it, we were like, oh, this is just total lock him up territory. How can we just not play this guy? This guy was an elite touch guy when he was just the only guy in the Steelers. But now it seems like that just might not be totally the case.
Yeah, you know, I would actually take a pretty close look at this getting into game time, because it might just be that you wind up playing Fitzgerald Toussaint instead.
Right.
I didn't realize Williams has actually been dealing with fluid buildup in his knee. And, you know, as people, we're not like NFL analysts, we're daily fantasy analysts, and Williams was not daily fantasy relevant, so we just weren't up on all his news. But he's actually only played one game since October 16th, and so if he's actually going to be less active than we think, or maybe the Steelers just actually want to keep him fresh for the playoffs too, we might just wind up zeroing in on Toussaint. Either way, I think if one of these guys was going to start, like whoever I hear is going to be the starter, I think I would just be comfortable playing because, again, well, two things. The matchup is terrific. Yes. Against the Browns. The Steelers aren't going to have their actual quarterback in this game either, so I think that they will be incentivized to run it quite a bit. And they're so cheap. You know, $4,500 is nothing to pay for these guys. Even if they're going to split carries, like, I think you can make a case that they could be worth it. So, yeah, I think it's worth keeping on your radar. But, yeah, unfortunately, it's not the slam dunk safety play that it looked like it would be.
Amazingly, it says a lot about the Browns that the Steelers are resting all of their best players and are still 6-point favorites with 25 implied points coming from Vegas. So that's all the Browns, baby. There's nothing else about that. So
nice job, Cleveland. Yeah, you guys are really doing great work out there.
25 implied points from this team is interesting when you consider that all their guys are punt plays, basically. So that's something that I think we'll take a little closer look at as we get closer to Sunday, still thrown off from last week. After him, we wrote up Mark Ingram. Ingram's one of these guys that is actually within striking distance of 1,000 yards rushing, and I always wonder, again, like how much this matters to teams and how much they, you know, they look at these little seemingly meaningless markers as incentive to get them there. And I speculated that on the write-up, and then things just came out and said it, and they said something along the lines of, oh yeah, we know he's close to 1,000. And, I mean, he's carried the load the last 2 weeks, which is really all you wanted to see. The game script, though, doesn't really favor him. They're supposed to play as underdogs, still coming very cheap on DraftKings. Is he safe, even if you think that the Saints are playing from behind?
I mean, it's tough to call any of these guys safe, to be honest with you, especially guys that are in a timeshare. But I think what makes him safe on DraftKings in particular, you know, on FanDuel, for me, it's quite a bit closer. But on DraftKings in particular, I think the price helps a lot with his safety and the fact that he's kind of the definitive goal line back. You know, 2 touchdowns last week against Tampa Bay, 17.5 carry average over the last 2 weeks. That's a lot of opportunity to get on his prices. So, you know, the fact you sprinkle in a couple of receptions here and there and the floor keeps going up, I think you can call him safe. I don't think the game script matters too much for his opportunity here because, you know, while the Saints are definitely willing to air it out, they actually have just mixed in running opportunities almost regardless of game script this season too. So, yeah, I could buy it.
The other two guys we mentioned just sort of in the throwaway zone but are worth probably considering. Chris Ivory is going to be without T.J. Yeldon this week, so it looks like he didn't practice yesterday. But if he were to be the only running back in Jacksonville, I guess you can take a shot there. Bilal Powell fits that same category, though Forte is maybe questionable. Powell's also questionable, so there's going to be some injury news that's going to shake out. So if both those guys ended up being the definitive, you know, just carry guys on the team, I think their prices are fine, though we're going to need to wait a little bit. And also, if you think the 1,000-yard marker is something that teams get behind in terms of wanting to get their guys there, other guys within 100 yards, Carlos Hyde, Devontae Freeman, and Spencer Ware are all within 100 yards, and then Todd Gurley is 155 away. I can't imagine he gets there, but who knows? So you think those numbers are incentives for guys to get to, those are some of the other players that are within striking distance. At wide receiver, you know, we've got guys like Jordy Nelson. We mentioned Rodgers, and they have something to play for against Detroit. Randall Cobb sat out last week. He didn't practice yesterday, and it's unclear if he's going to play again. Is Nelson, of the top-tier wide receivers, has Jordy just sort of separated himself into the, I'm the safest guy? I mean, his price is high, but man, he's been pretty consistent in the short term as he seems to have gotten healthier and more in sync with Rodgers. Is he the guy that we want to turn to in cash games, or do we want to look somewhere else?
Yeah, I think it's easy to forget that Jordy Nelson was right there in the conversation with guys like Antonio Brown and Julio Jones back when he was healthy the last time. You know, there was a period where he was averaging 15 targets a game, putting up huge yardage totals. He's an excellent red zone receiver. And now, yeah, so 8,200, higher than the 7,800 you paid last week or the 73 the week before that. No doubt about it, but the targets are supporting it, you know, 10 and 11 targets against Minnesota and Chicago, you know, topping 100 yards in both those games, couple touchdowns against the Vikings. And if you look at his game log, he's had some really bad matchups the last 5 weeks. I mean, Minnesota, Chicago, actually has been kind of tough on wide receiver ones this year. Seattle, 7th overall. Houston, the best team against wide receiver ones. And then Philly. Like, that's kind of a gauntlet that he went through right there. And the lowest week he had in all those weeks was 13 fantasy points, topping 22 fantasy points twice. He's just excellent. And you still don't have to pay $9,000 for him. And in a year where they're really, like, almost no receiver has really supported a $9,000 price tag, I think he just might be the safest commodity going. So, yeah, I would be pumped to play Jordy in basically any format.
You know, we also had Julio Jones on there with the idea the Falcons have something to play for. The Vegas total is really high. He's, you know, only had 4 catches last week. And I, you know, like I said, I watched the game, but I'm not clear if he was running at 100% or not. He didn't practice yesterday, though those could just be maintenance days. You know, a guy like Julio Jones in a game that the Falcons need to win, or a guy like Odell Beckham, you know, in that 8,800 range, who is like, you know, the Giants don't have as much to play for, but maybe has been seeing more consistent targets. Like, what do you think about comparing those two guys together? We took Jones, but I'm wondering just like what the process was for why one over the other.
Yeah, I would never take Beckham over Jones for safety this week. I think you can make a pretty good case that you can take him for upside just because kind of anything can happen. But given that the Giants are locked into their playoff role, it's really hard to imagine Beckham getting the full run of snaps. And Julio might not either. You know, I don't know that you can definitively call either of these guys very safe. But given that Falcons' high total, given that, again, this is essentially their first playoff game, I don't know why they would keep quote-unquote saving Jones. You know, like I've read every single report on what's been going on with Julio Jones recently, and you know, there's some issue with the toe. People are saying he was trying to be careful in his return here. You know, there's a lot of different claims as to why he played just a 62% of the snaps last week, but I really do think that given that it's so clear-cut, it's so black and white, that if they win they get X results, there's no uncertainty there. I don't know why, like, are they going to keep being careful with him in the first round of the playoffs? Like, I just personally don't think so. I think we see double-digit targets and excellent performance here.
Yeah, and finally, we mentioned Doug Baldwin. Baldwin, when with Lockett down or whatever they saw last week, just saw an insane amount of targets, like in the high teens in terms of targets last week. Which
in my old flag football routine where we had this one guy, Williams, who was just an actual football player, and he was so much faster than everyone else on our team. So we just threw the ball to him every time. That's like that's how Seattle views Doug Baldwin right now.
What do we do with games like that? That, you know, Baldwin's been fine with targets this year, and he's been a decent guy, like not this kind of level, but I get a little worried about wanting to overcorrect for something like that because it's so crazy, like sort of out of bounds. I mean, he's been averaging just a little more than 8 targets per game this whole entire season, and then just see this kind of number, like, you know, if his average has been 8 and then he gets 19 or whatever, and then what do we do with his target share? Like, how much do we let that influence his target share going forward?
That's a great question, and I think it brings up a fundamental question about DFS, which is how do we weight like outlier performances? And like, I think of baseball immediately, right? And so we've talked about how you don't want to overweight just a pitcher going out there and throwing 7 innings and 8 strikeouts, right? Like, that just happens. It happens to every pitcher from time to time. So a guy who's bad doing that doesn't really change your perception of him too much. But on the other side, if a good pitcher goes out there and gives up 8 walks in 2 innings, well, that's actually meaningful. You know, there could be an injury concern. There could be other stuff. I would say when it comes to wide receivers, the two basic outlier performances are no targets at all and an incredible amount of targets. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually willing to say that an incredible amount of targets is meaningful in this situation. Now, sometimes it's just the matchup was too good or the disparity in matchup was too wide. So, like, picture like Nnamdi Asamoah in his prime or Darrell Revis in his prime. They would really skew this target share thing dramatically, and you could almost just throw games out completely. But given the fact that Doug Baldwin was lined up against Patrick Peterson, and it's about as bad a matchup as you could get, and he still got these targets, and the fact that the other most targeted guy on the team has gone down here, I think you can trust it on some level. Now, for your modeling purposes, you don't want to give a guy like this 19 targets. No. That's completely ridiculous. But you could give him 11, you know, like that wouldn't be out of bounds to me. He had 11 targets against Green Bay 2 weeks ago. So I think I want to trust it. I want to trust it, but with the caveat that you don't just pencil him in for the same week 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah, I think we put him like 9.5, 10 targets going into this week, which seems correct-ish, all things considered. And that's basically good enough at his prices to get him into optimal lineups on both sides.
Yeah, 10 sounds like the right number to me.
Right. I think mostly the thing is that it's going to be very difficult to just make a case to pay up at running back this week. And I think that's going to that's going to end up just jamming in up, you know, maybe 3 expensive receivers and an expensive quarterback, because I think there's just are plenty of reasons to not pay for running back. And finally, with tight end, Travis Kelce. Travis Kelce is actually, for the season, a top 10 receiver on the year. He's 8th in yards and actually 12th in receptions. I mean, those, if he was a wide receiver, he'd be in like the 7,500 range, because, and I think it's just the only thing the difference is he's a tight end. Like, because, you know, he's priced with guys, he's opportunity wise and yards wise ahead of some guys that are priced significantly above him in the wide receiver core. Do you think this is just the sites, like, just not maybe just like having a different sort of price multiplier for tight ends? Because he's more, you know, he's had more receptions than Cooper, or you know, more yards than Cooper, Baldwin, Jarvis Landry, you know, some of these other, Golden Tate, and yet he's priced underneath them.
Yeah, I think there's absolutely different pricing algorithms on FanDuel in particular for tight ends versus other positions. I mean, we see this countless times where your sort of league average tight end is in the 5,000s and a similarly producing wide receiver will be around 6,000. I think that speaks to the NFL's overall offensive philosophy, which is just to utilize wide receivers more than tight ends. Like, tight ends obviously wind up in blocking sets a lot more than wide receivers do. Kelce, I think, is terrific. The weird thing with him this season has been the relative lack of red zone usage. You know, just 4 touchdowns on 84 receptions is not particularly encouraging. But on the same token, I also sort of don't feel like that should be sustainable. You know, like, he is just a good target down low. So, you know, that could just be a variance issue. But yeah, going into a week at tight end, like every week that has a great deal of uncertainty, I think paying $6,800 for him, especially just because I think you mentioned this for running backs, but it's true at wide receiver also. Like, none of these really expensive guys are really quote unquote safe at these other positions. And so the benefit you get from saving up at tight end, like you normally do, is a lot lower than usual, right? So you don't want to go pay for Antonio Brown or Odell Beckham necessarily. So yeah, I think it's an excellent way to just get safety out of a position that is anything but.
Yeah, there's basically an elite class of tight end this season, just in terms of yards and targets and receptions. And that's Kelce, Greg Olson and Kyle Rudolph, and that's basically it. And then there's like a dip down with Dennis Pitta, though Dennis Pitta did miss some time, so he is sort of an interesting case because his numbers don't look bad when you consider that he hasn't played in the same amount of games. But that group of three guys basically sits head and shoulders above really anybody else, and no one else is really that close. And I mean, Olson's interesting this week, I guess, but we also wrote up Kyle Rudolph. It's funny about the Vikings. For all the things that, you know, we're going into the season with the Vikings in terms of, you know, their running team, and they're just going to play, you know, defensive-oriented football and just try to get, you know, control things on the ground, they have two guys in Diggs and Thielen who are actually within striking distance both of reaching 1,000 yards, and Rudolph is kind of there, almost there also. So do you like Rudolph this week? Does he fall in the same class as Kelce for you, or just kind of maybe it's a step below?
I think it's a slight step below, but obviously we always want to take price into consideration as well. The thing I like about Rudolph, actually, is that the Vikings have just as much to play for as they did last week, which is to say nothing. And so right. I think we can trust his usage very, very highly versus some other tight ends that we might be considering this week. You know, the Bears have been excellently bad. Is that a thing? They've been terrible against tight ends this season, ranking 28th in DVOA. So I do think it's a decent spot. I wouldn't mind winding up with either, actually, in the tight end spot for cash games. So, yeah, I'm open to it, too.
I take it back. I was a little high on what considered striking distance of 1,000 would be. He needs 267 yards.
So strike! It's a striking distance. Got it.
So a little bit overstated, but I was correct about his receptions and targets. All right. That is it for us today. We'll be back again tomorrow. We're breaking down every single game on the NFL schedule leading into Week 17, which should be an interesting one from DFS purposes. We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Head over to the site, free 3-day trial, free for 3 days, $29.95 a month. After that, that gets you optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings NFL, NBA as well. I think you'll be happy with the service. And we will talk to you guys again tomorrow. All right, buddy. See you then.
Yeah, man. We're like a tight end with a 277-yard receiving game.